It is Stardate 699-79.7. You are listening to the Prime Defective podcast. We watched Star Trek The Next Generation Season 1, Episode 11, entitled The Big Goodbye.
See ya.
Yeah. Directed by Joseph L. Scanlon and written by Tracy Torme of Haven fame.
Haven. Oh, what a great episode.
More like haven't. Hey-o.
But a bump.
Welcome back again to the Prime Defective Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian. On the other side of the microphone is Jared. Jolon True, Brian. I've three beers deep, so this will be a good episode.
Oh, well, shit, man. If I knew we were drinking, I would have started drinking.
It was just the spur of the moment. I've been off of work for 2 weeks.
Not fired.
I've just been off of work. I took two weeks vacation.
Oh, so you're in the midst of it. You haven't been off for 2 weeks.
Yes, I'm in the midst of my vacation. I'm coming towards the end of it. And not only is it vacation, but the kids are also gone.
Oh, man.
So the wheels are off. It's been drinking.
It's time to watch sexy Star Trek, so put on Enterprise and watch the rubdown scenes.
Oh, yes, we need to rub you down with this bio gel every episode. Hot Vulcan.
Yes.
You're the only common thread in the rubdowns. So, is there any Star Trek news this week, sir?
There really is no news this week, unfortunately. The only thing I can think that's worthy, that's kind of Star Trek related, is NASA got their Juno probe thing to land right outside Jupiter. That was a few days ago.
The word you just said make no sense to me.
Okay, NASA launched a probe 5 years ago.
All right.
To go to Jupiter. It went like 1.5 miles, and they got it to land, or it, not land, but stop in orbit around Jupiter. It's going to take pictures. It's going to do scans. It's going to do all kinds of cool shit. And the most most impressive thing about it is that they launched it 5 years ago and got it to go where it was supposed to go within 1 second. They were off by 1 second.
Well, that's fucking terrible. How could you be off by 1 second? Jesus.
Hey, man. It's going to take nice color pictures. They're running some kind of contest where people send in stuff and you can decide where they're going to point the camera at and all kinds of neat shit. So, I mean, what's the next step? Holodecks, right?
Absolutely. How long is it going to take to get those photos back?
Probably only takes like minutes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yet radio signals travel at light speed.
This is untrue. There has to be some kind of delay.
I'm sure. In how long maybe the like 10, 15 minutes. Maybe hours. Like 8 hours. Do I have to look this shit up?
Yes. No.
Okay.
I mean, do you think that it's going to be someplace? How long does it take to get pictures back from Jupiter?
I'm sure there's an answer.
By Jove, Juno enters Jupiter's orbit, and you get to take pictures. Yes, but tell me how long it takes to get the pictures back, CNET.
I just watched The Martian, and I think it was like 15 minutes.
No, there was a bigger gap.
Hour? Okay, maybe hours.
In radio contact, wasn't there? This is super exciting. There's a lot of words on the screen, Jared.
All right, let me look.
Come in.
Did you find the answer?
No, I'm still looking. I was doing a Control-F search on the website for how long does it take to get to Jupiter? How long does it take to get to Jupiter? How long does it take to get pictures back from Jupiter, motherfucker? How do you come to this conversation without knowing this?
Okay, look. What? Radio waves travel very quickly through space. Radio waves are a kind of electromagnetic radiation, and thus they move at the speed of light. The speed of light is a little less than 300,000 kilometers per second. At that speed, a beam of light could go around the Earth. Okay. So, Let's do some math.
The distance between the Earth and Jupiter in kilometers.
Cat, I'm going to fucking kill you. Get off the desk.
He's just trying to help. Oh, my God. All right. 600, come in. 628,743,036 kilometers. So it's 628 million kilometers. And how long does it take for a radio wave? 300,000
kilometers a second. Yeah.
300,000 kilometers a second.
Yes.
Time to pull up my handy dandy calculator. Ah. Seconds divided by 60, 34 minutes.
Okay, that's not so bad.
That's radio waves, though. Is that how they're transmitting photos from Jupiter?
What other way would they be doing?
I have no idea, internet.
Subspace?
Oh, subspace. Anyway, so that's the Star Trek-esque news.
That's real about
life,
as much as I
real
get,
life
yeah.
science that yep. helps us get to replicators.
Replicators, transporters, you name it, man.
Got it.
It's all going to be here within a few months.
Speaking of transporters, side note to our show, I watched the Fantastic Four movie this week.
No! Oh,
Fantastic.
Yeah, Fantastic.
Oh, man. The best part of that movie was the first 5 minutes when they were kids. Building shit in the garage.
Yeah.
It just did nothing happen in that movie.
I know.
Ugh. All right, not to get off track, but just because we talked about transporters and that's supposedly
some transporting,
kind
yeah.
of what they were talking about in the beginning, at least, before they decided to go to a completely other dimension.
Yeah. When his spoiler fifth grade teacher's like, you created a transporter, you little fucker, but you're still a moron. And
Homer Simpson?
Yeah, exactly.
Homer Simpson. Okay, so this week we watched episode 11 of season 1 of The Next Generation entitled The Big Goodbye, in which we find out Picard really does love those private dicks.
Yes, he does. He loves Dixon Cox. I mean, Dixon Hill.
Yes, that's all I could keep thinking of as well as watching this. Dixon Cox. So not a quick summary, but how I felt about this episode, I really enjoyed this episode. All right.
I was bored in some of it. Some of it I liked. Some of it didn't. I liked the humor in it.
Mm-hmm.
The humor was good. That was about it. Everything else seemed to drag on.
This is head and shoulders above half the episodes we've watched so far.
Yes, I will give you that. And it's the first the holodeck goes amok.
The first of many, yes.
Yeah.
The first of many. So now the quick explanation of the episode, summary of the episode. Storyline B starts off with the Enterprise has been tasked with meeting with a race that we've had poor relations with in the past. And it's an insect alien race, which has some kind of crazy language. Picard is tasked with giving them their greeting in their own language. And it's like all kinds of fuckery. He needs to know all kinds of weirdo sounds and shit and the way to read the language. And Troy's like, you know what? You're really stressed. You deserve a break today. Why not go to the holodeck?
Have a Kit Kat bar.
Right, exactly, and have a Kit Kat bar. And there's a really cool program for you called Dixon Hill. It's already all loaded up and ready to go. You go in there and enjoy yourself. And he's like, I'll do that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you're just giving the summary. I don't need to get into the particulars of this.
Yes. So Picard goes in, loves everything he has to see in the beginning of it, comes out, tells his whole crew, he's like, oh my God, it's fucking fantastic. It's the best. He's like, you should come, Bev. You should really come and enjoy it with me. And let's bring that 20th century scholar we have on the ship.
You're getting too, yeah, with just us. Give the summary. We'll get into all that shit later.
Relax. I want to make sure that everyone knows who's going in, back in. Data decides he's going to fucking tag along too. They go back into the program, and while they're in the program, these fucking alien insectoids, the Hirodin, run a scan of the ship, which fucks up, like, all the systems, No, not all the systems, just the holodeck for some reason. And they're trapped in the holodeck, and all the safeties are off. One of the dudes gets shot by some mafia dudes or whatever. They figure out what's wrong with the holodeck. They get him out. And Picard shows up just in time to deliver the greeting to the Hirodin before they, like, destroy the ship. The end. Is that a quick enough summary for you?
That is definitely a quick enough summary. Hmm. Brian.
Yes, sir.
You said you already liked this episode. Why do you like this episode?
I really liked it because it's like everything that's going on in the holodeck is totally fish out of water. And the humor of that, I always enjoy. Whenever they travel someplace in the holodeck, mm-hmm. and it's just like they're in the 1940s. It's a 1940s pulp crime novel program that they're in. Dixon Hill is supposed to be like a
Philip Marlowe type.
Yes. Is it Philip Marlowe?
Did I say that right?
I can't remember his name. I was trying to think of the name. But yes, he's like a 1940s detective, hard-boiled, and just the language, and they don't know anything about the history of of the 1940s history. So at one point in time, Picard's reading a newspaper on the street, and he's like, DiMaggio makes 56-hit streak. And Data's like, no, that's DiMaggio, Jolton Joe. And just like shit like that, I always get a chuckle out of. But then
they did a on Memory Alpha here. They actually have the exact date that they're probably at because of the amount of hits that DiMaggio had in that paper. And if I could find it real quick.
Oh, because at that point in time, he only had 38.
Right.
Yeah, you know what? That's funny. I didn't write that down, but I wrote down the supposed day of his streak being broken, which is 10 years from now. So we have to we have to come back 10 years from now and report on whether or not the streak was broken.
No, they actually do that in Deep Space Nine. They tell you who broke that streak.
I know who broke its streak. They just told you right here, the London Kings.
Yeah,
he says it in this episode.
Yeah, but he doesn't say the player.
No, he says the team.
Yeah, they mention the player in Deep Space Nine. You know,
because Deep Space Nine is a superior show to The Next Generation.
No, because Sisko loved baseball. Mm. And Picard loved tea.
And his grandma.
Yes. One of the headlines that Picard reads is DiMaggio's streak reaches 37. According to the Baseball Almanac, DiMaggio reached that number on June 25th, 1941.
Wow, look at that.
So there you go.
They did some real research back before the internet.
Yes. The unnamed baseball player who broke DiMaggio's record for longest consecutive game hitting streak would later be revealed as Harmon Buck-Bokai of the London Kings in Star Trek Deep Space Nine, If Wishes Were Horses. We'd all be eating steaks.
Huh. Buck-Bokai. I just wrote that down. We'll come back in 10 years.
Yes.
And make sure we find out who did that. At least the people on Deep Space Nine did their further research and went back
and they could have really
something correctly.
You're right. They could have really boned that.
Yes,
they and could've. Had them on a different team or whatever and not paid attention to that.
Yep. Which happens all the time. So kudos, Deep Space Nine continuity writer.
Yes.
Continuity checker. So, yeah, that's the kind of stuff I really liked about this episode. There's a scene with Beverly when she shows up in the holodeck and sits down next to, I'm assuming, what is probably a prostitute.
Yes.
In the short skirt. And she's, like, trying to, like, mimic her and, like, pulls her skirt up. But then the policeman comes and takes the whore away. And Beverly realizes what's going on.
Come on, toots.
And starts covering herself up. Just little things like that. And Beverly chewing the stick of chewing gum.
Yeah, the Crusher comedy runner I was enjoying. I like that. I like the stick of gum, which was great.
I like when she applauds when a man gets shot.
Well, they all, like, that's the thing is, that was the comedy bits. Like, whenever they were threatened or anything like that, mm-hmm. they all got big smiles on their faces. They're like, oh, shit, this is so much fun.
Yeah.
Like, I did like that. But the story just, I don't know, man. Like, in the end, I mean, I don't want to jump all the way to the end, but, like, where they try to reason with the computer program. And I was like, this is like me having a conversation with Rocket League. And trying to tell Rocket League why I should be going. You know what I'm saying? Like, what are they doing?
I want to see that episode.
Listen, Rocket League, you're not a real car. So, you know, when I turn left, you should go all the way left, you know? And I'm a real person. When I turn this off, you're going to go away.
So,
but yeah, so just some of that was kind of boring.
They're still, you know what? And you and I have said it before. They're still working shit out.
Yes.
They're still working shit out, which is obvious in this episode. Picard leaves the holodeck at one point in time with lipstick on his face from a computer program.
Stays on his face the whole time.
Right. So, like, they're still working shit out, but I really... This was a breath of fresh air compared to some of the recent episodes we've had.
I will agree.
Okay. Do we start from the
beginning? It was no Haven. No.
You want to start from the beginning? Just notable pieces?
Well, right off the bat, after Troy suggested he go take his quick vacay before he's got to do his speech for the Haradans, he opens up his personal log, the captain's log, and starts explaining what the holodeck is.
Yes, he does.
Explanation
about the holodeck like we've never seen it before.
Well, not only that we've never seen it before, but I have to assume that these logs go to admirals and shit at Starfleet Command, and they're going to be like, hey, did you know the Enterprise had one of these things? Can we get one here?
Yeah, I wrote it down. That's exactly what I wrote down. It was an explanation about the holodeck like we've never seen it before. I didn't understand who he was speaking to or why.
Yeah.
Almost, again, as if the episode was meant to be earlier in the show, which is I'm sure it was not. But is this the first time he's been on the holodeck? I was trying to remember that.
You know what? I think it might be.
So, I mean, the way he acted when he was talking to the bridge crew, holy shit, you would have to imagine this was the first time he was on one.
Well, here's the thing. Okay, and yeah, you know, as a matter of fact, I'm looking at fucking Memory Alpha right now, and this does confirm what I thought. When the show first started, right, which was 10 episodes ago, the holodeck was only able to do landscapes. And simple, you know, they could do human beings, but they weren't interactive like they were in this episode. Hmm. You know, like, remember Yar fights a dude?
Yeah.
With Taekwondo, that kind of shit. And then I got it all confused because I haven't watched these in order, but there was another episode I remember where they eventually upgrade the holodeck so that it can do these multifunction characters and make it more real. And it's the episode 110010001.
Yeah, I know. That's coming up in like three episodes. That's not this episode.
Right. But this episode had been scheduled for production after that episode.
Oh, okay.
So that's why I'm like, wow, because they're talking about the holodecks like they're the fucking craziest things in the world. And they're all like, oh, like everybody who goes in there is like, this is like the first time they've been in there. And I'm like, wait a minute. This has got to be out of order or something.
Yeah, I remember that 1011 episode that they did the upgrades to do this, which is why I didn't understand why this was so.
Right. So it's out of order. So, but again, I believe Picard was on the holodeck in that episode. But I guess this is the first time he actually got to, you know, stretch his legs in there. Yeah. So they are all fucking just excited and touching shit like lamps and
I'm going to talk about another episode really quick in the middle of this, but in the 1011 episode, isn't that the episode where Riker goes into the holodeck?
Yes, Riker meets a character
meets
in the holodeck.
The chick in the holodeck.
Minuet.
Yeah.
Minuet. She comes up again in a later episode.
But and who watches this show? All right. So so he meets Minuet. But he's sitting in the room when Picard is freaking out about the holodeck, and Riker should have just been like, yeah, man, I know. I don't know.
I agree. Well, it says that this was scheduled for production. Maybe I don't know how it
was written in line to be after the upgrade, but then they actually moved it up in the production schedule. Right.
I will tell you this, though. When Picard when they're wiping the lipstick off his face at the staff meeting.
Yeah.
And he's like kissing that woman, and she was like, it was exciting, and he was like, it was so real. Riker's face just lights up. He's like, wait a minute, you can kiss bitches in this thing?
Fuck those heart playing fucking holograms. I don't need them anymore.
I'll be in my bunk.
Much like we said last week, the holodeck door is always locked all the time.
Yeah,
or at least it should be.
All right, so moving on from that.
Oh, wait a second. No. Okay, so he goes in to the program. And, you know, it's a program that's already set up for him, as Troy explains, But yet, when he goes to the holodeck, he has to set a time period.
I didn't understand that either. It's like he set the time period, and then he loads the characters into that time period. It makes no sense.
No, it made no sense.
It should have just been like, load the Dixon Hill program and be done.
I think it was just in order to set up the point that they were in 1941 for some reason.
I guess so.
So he goes in. There's a random person cleaning the hallway. He walks into his office. His secretary looks at him weird because he's still wearing his Starfleet uniform. And she says something about, what does she say?
She's like,
he lost a bet. That he lost a bet.
Yeah.
So then he
and I like that little running joke too, where it comes up again later.
Right. So he talks to the secretary, then he goes into his own office, and there's a client waiting for him, or a potential client.
Well, wait, before you do that, I got to back up, but I got you. Halloween doesn't make it into the 23rd century, huh?
Oh, see, I thought Halloween was mentioned by the client, not the secretary.
Oh, maybe it was. I don't know.
It's mentioned by the client, because he goes in, and the first thing he says to the client is, I lost a bet, referring to the fact that he's wearing the Starfleet uniform, and the first thing out of her mouth is, at least you're ready for Halloween. And Picard says, Halloween?
What?
Yeah. So, no, Halloween didn't make it. All Hallows Eve, Samhain, whatever the fuck, didn't make it into the 23rd century?
Yes.
Dude, I'm three beers in, and I know the order the show happened.
Well, you're better than me.
I know.
Hey, those two chicks just blended into the same girl for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they didn't last very long.
No.
You never see the secretary again, the client you never see again after this. So the client says, oh my god, someone's trying to kill me. I need you. Picard comes up with a weird, she asks how much, and he's like $20 a day. Why the fuck does he know? Well, because I guess he's read these, right?
Yes, I assume.
So that's why he knows. He's like, all right, $20 a day.
Yeah, because he does bring up at another point when he's getting interrogated, he's like, I got to tell you, he's like, you're spot on. You're exactly how you should be.
Yeah, I've read all of these, and you're perfect. So the client is the one that kisses him, and then he leaves the holodeck.
Yeah, he had a short vacation, but he went to go because he wanted to change, play the role properly.
Right. But as he's leaving the holodeck, somebody knocks at his office door, right?
Mm-hmm.
He never sees who it is because he's like, oh, I am indisposed, I need to leave, and he supposedly leaves through another door, and we find that there's another guy on the other side of the door who is some kind of hitman or some kind of nefarious person of some sort who's like, oh, you'll pay for this. You're avoiding me, and I'll get you
right
later. But the fact that Picard leaves with a lipstick into the real world from the holodeck, that's the where we're still trying to figure out how the holodeck works. Wesley gets wet and leaves being wet.
I don't think they hammer this shit out till like Voyager. I honestly don't, because there are, and we're in later seasons, there's shit that doesn't make any sense with them pulling shit off the holodeck.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Data does it a number of times. I mean, they break their own rules in this episode.
I'm going to get another beer.
Did I just break some rule by saying that?
No, I'm going to get another beer. That's all. Hold on. My wife's going to come home and see all the beer caps on the counter and be like, what is going on?
Where is she?
She'll work.
Oh.
Stand by. I need to log this beer into my Untappd app.
I don't even want to know.
The future is now, Jared.
Yeah, and what does this do for you by logging this beer in?
It gives me a sense of self-worth. I drive this car in my own sense of self-worth. It just keeps track of the different kinds of beers I've had. And
so in case you want to relive the experience, you can go, oh, I remember on July 6, 2016, I drank blankety blank beer. And it was good.
Well, no, that's not what it's for at all. It is so I can keep track of the beers I've had, so I know if maybe there was one I didn't like to make sure I don't have it again. Or if there's one.
White people fucking problem.
Or to recommend a beer to somebody else.
Okay.
Or because everyone likes badges and achievements, you get badges and achievements for drinking.
But can't you just say that you drank it?
You could, but what's the fun of that?
If you want to collect all the badges.
It's not like fucking Pokemon, man.
All right. Okay, can we get on with this?
I have some integrity. Jesus.
Okay.
Even though I do two podcasts with you, I still have some integrity.
Surprising.
Mm-hmm. This is a sour mash ale, and it's delicious.
Okay. All right, dude. Can we get on with the show?
What, this isn't part of the show? So,
no.
Picard calls a staff meeting to tell them all about how awesome
he is. No, that's not true. That's not why he did it.
Yes, I
thought so at first, but no, they address it after a minute
exactly
or so.
Exactly why he called the staff meeting, because he wanted to brag about how awesome he is and how awesome the Dixon Hill program is. He can't stop talking about how awesome the holodeck is.
He goes on for a good 5 minutes before he's like, okay, I understand I called you here for a different reason, but let me tell you something, man. This shit was real.
How the snozzberries taste like snozzberries. He fucking,
and they are all intently listening.
And I saw something on the street. I think it was in an automobile.
An automobile?
Automobile? Like, and fucking Worf repeats automobile like Long Duck Dong does.
Automobile?
And then Data.
I think that was his only line this episode.
No, that is not true. He also says something about their heading at some point.
Oh, okay.
But at least he doesn't get shut down.
He does not get shut down.
No Worf shutdowns this episode, people. Sorry. So, yeah.
Plenty Picard of Data shutdowns.
Yeah, well, Picard goes on for a good 5 minutes about how awesome the holodeck is, how real the people are, how real the landscape is, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Beverly wipes the lipstick off his face. And then Picard decides to reveal the real reason for the staff meeting, which was about the Harad.
Yes.
About how they need to get shit right for the Harad, and
because something bad happened the last 20 years ago when the last Starfleet ship fucked it up. They won't say what.
They won't say it, and they won't show it, and Picard doesn't want to know anything about it anymore, apparently.
Yeah, and Data is perplexed by this whole thing.
Yeah, Data multiple times tries to get Picard to rewatch the footage of what happened the last time a Starfleet vessel fucked up the greeting to the Haradan. It sounds like the Haradan attacked them.
Right. Now, and in light of that, I was thinking, I'm like, is this really the time to be fucking off in the holodeck when, you know, one slip of the tongue, one wrong syllable, one vowel screwed up and something disastrous could happen?
Exactly. Wouldn't you think, given the technology, not only of the 23rd century, but the technology we have now and for the past 50 years,
mm-hmm.
that you might... I don't know, pre-record your greeting perfectly.
Well, something happened along the timeline, Brian. Along with Halloween, apparently microphones, recording equipment, and cameras for some reason all fucking did. Well, cameras only work outside of ships. They do not work inside of ships.
Explain.
How many times has somebody been running around the Enterprise that they can't find? They don't know where this person is. They can't communicate with inside the holodeck. There's no cameras in the holodeck for them to see what's going on. You know. Maybe you want to record something you did for prosperity. Not going to happen. There's no cameras inside.
It's like they really just got so reliant on certain things that they're like, oh, we don't need these basic things like voice and visual recording anymore.
Yes.
So Picard goes, well, he invites Beverly.
And
Waylon, the 20th century historian expert that they just happened to have on the ship. I don't know why.
Well, it's just that he just happened to be, I don't think that was his job on the ship. I think he just happened to be, you know, for all we know, he was That's scrubbing his warp cores, and he just happens to have that hobby.
Jeffrey Stubbs. And yes, that is his... That's just his hobby. He likes the 20th right. century stuff. But
there's a lot in the 20th century, though. Let me tell you. That's 100 years.
Well, not only that, but why are you pulling the 20th century historian into a work of fiction?
Well, I think he was there to, you know, because Picard didn't know what an automobile was or a fucking, you know.
Or a DiMaggio.
Yeah, or a lamp, or whatever. You know, he was there to point out these things. That's a lamp, sir.
The lamp. It's so good. So there's so many good things in this episode. I was surprised that you didn't like it as much as I did.
I don't know. I just find it hard to believe that they don't know what a fucking lamp is. You know?
Yeah. It's like, oh, I agree. Are there no lamps on the ship? Like, does somebody doesn't have like a retro lamp in one of their quarters?
I don't know. I'd be surprised if like someone lit a match. They'd be like, "What the fuck is fire? What is that?"
It's the red flower. So he invites Beverly, gets Wayland on board, and then at some point in time, Data and Geordi are talking, and Geordi says something about how Dixon Hill is like the 20th century equivalent to Sherlock, to which Data's ears prick up, and then he decides to fucking be the fourth wheel on the trip into the holodeck.
Yes.
So they go to the holodeck, and while they're in there, those dumb alien insect deals do some kind of weirdo, very super invasive probe on the ship, and the only thing that's affected adversely is the holodeck. The doors
right,
open.
They don't know that right away.
Weird shit's happening.
Right.
And
they don't know that though.
They don't know that. And in fact, Beverly didn't go into the holodeck originally. She showed up later.
Right. But the three of them go in first, and they say that she'll catch up with us later.
But she goes in when the door's acting all wacky and the computer's saying all weird shit. But she's like, whatever.
Once Beverly sees something weird and does mention it, but nobody cares.
Well, while she's already inside. She doesn't mention
it. Right, she goes inside and she's like, well, I had a little trouble getting in, and nobody even asked. Like, what do you mean? They're just like, oh, okay.
The bouncer wouldn't let you in?
Let's do our thing. And I liked how, when Picard and Waylon and Data go in, and that's where you find the whole bit with the newspaper, with DiMaggio, the hits. They run into some cops, and some cops bring him in on suspicion of murder because his client is dead.
Yeah, the client got murdered, and his business card was in her pocket.
Yeah, which is obviously he did it.
Clearly. I mean,
yes,
you have to have done it and then put your business card in her pocket.
Mm-hmm. That's why when I hand out my business card to people, I'm like, listen, if you get killed with this, I'm not taking a blame.
Try not to get killed with this in your pocket, yeah. Please.
Throw this away before you might die. Mm-hmm. And Picard is getting interrogated in the police station. That's when Beverly shows up, and she gets to hang out in the police station for a while. That's her vacation. Them waiting for Picard.
Right. Well, she says that, too, because, well, she's all excited. She finds out he's being interrogated, and she's like, we should all be being interrogated.
I know. That was funny. Why does he get to have all the fun?
Right.
But the fact that she didn't, and they had to just sit there and wait, mm-hmm. And I'm like, so you get this great holodeck experience of waiting in a police station. It's the police station waiting room experience.
It's like The Sims, where I go to work all day.
Yeah.
And then I go to work all
but
day.
But this is where some of the nuttiest shit happens, though, with Waylon, like, molesting the lamp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The wall lamp. Now, let's not confuse it with a floor lamp.
Yes, because there's a floor lamp bit, too.
It's actually not a lamp. It's a sconce.
You're right.
It's a wall sconce where he's, like, fingering it all up and caressing it.
With a big old smile on his face. But do you also get all the Beverly good comedy runners with the makeup, with the hooker, with the bubble gum?
The gum one is probably my favorite because the cop offers her a stick of gum and she takes it.
And
which
yeah,
she
and I was
clearly doesn't know what it is. But
right, and I was thinking at that point when she grabbed it out and she was unwrapping it, and I'm like, out of all the fucked up things that they're like confused about, I'm like, gum she knows, right? And as soon as she swallows it, I was like, genius.
You know something's up when she tries to put it in her mouth. Because she tries to put it in sideways.
Oh,
and, like,
I didn't notice
that. The entire thing, where normally a piece of gum you put in lengthways and like chew it a little bit while you're putting it in, maybe. She tries to put it in sideways. Go watch that scene again. She tries to put the whole thing in her mouth sideways. But then, yeah, she only chews it for like 5 seconds and then swallows it. She also agreed to the fact that she likes Tommy Dorsey.
She does.
Yes. It's just everything about them in the holodeck with all the out of time, don't know what's going on, don't understand things. It was just, like I said, it was a breath of fresh air. I really enjoyed it. It was light and breezy.
Meanwhile,
though, the story is kind of serious to a point where
right.
You find out later that because the aliens fucked up the holodeck, things are able to happen in the holodeck that the characters clearly thought weren't able to happen, but we really didn't know couldn't happen, right? Were we aware that there were safety protocols in the holodeck?
No, they don't mention anything about that. I guess they just assume that nothing, go under the assumption that nothing is real, so you can't get hurt.
Right. So what else happens here? A lot of little nuances, the language, Beverly with her dress, which I already mentioned earlier with the hooker.
Mm. No. The best part comes up when Picard gets out of the interrogation room.
Well, I'm going through my notes here.
Oh, okay.
Because they flip back to the story, the B storyline with the Herodin. The Herodin. And Riker's making a log entry, but it's not ship's log or commander's log or captain's log supplemental. It's the Enterprise log, which I thought was weird.
I didn't catch that.
Enterprise log. So then the Herodin are trying to talk to Riker, and Riker's like, well, I'm the second in command. I'm not the captain. Why don't we go on the screen so we can talk it out? And they're like, fuck you. You're
offensive to us.
You're offensive to us. We're not going to show ourselves to you, which to me says, we don't have money in the budget to make a new fucking alien.
You are absolutely right, sir, because it's right here in the production notes.
Yeah, that's all that said to me.
Where was it? Something about Tracy Torme being upset that they couldn't see the aliens, but they didn't have the money for it.
Does it say anything in Memory Alpha if the Herodin ever show up again?
The name sounds familiar, but they end up using names again over and over again.
They're not one of the five races of the Zindi, are they?
No, they're not. let me look for Herodin real quick, and I will let you know if they ever show up again.
Well,
I'm
going
to know if Cyrus Redblock does.
While
he makes a claim at the end. Go ahead.
While you're doing that, so the Herodin shut down Riker and say, F you offend us. We're not going to have any conversation with you. We only want to talk to the captain and end the conversation. They try to find the captain. The captain's in the holodeck, but Geordi's like, I'm at the holodeck and I can't get in. Something's wrong. I can't communicate with anybody in there. And Riker's like, all right, well, I'll be right down. And who pipes up other than young Wesley Crusher saying, well, I've read all of the manuals about the holodeck. I could help. And all I could think is, of course you fucking did. Of course you read all of the technical manuals about the holodeck, you nerd. So Riker brings Wesley down to the holodeck, to which Wesley starts looking into binoculars on the side of the holodeck.
I know. I
trying to look at the program, I guess. I don't know.
Before we get into that, real quickly, the Herodin do show up again, but only in name, in the episode The Samaritan Snare. I don't know if you remember that one, where Geordi gets captured by those dumb aliens that don't know how to do anything.
No. And they is that the real plot? Because I don't remember that episode.
You don't remember that episode?
No.
Yes, it's these moron aliens that just like steal technology don't know how to.
The two dudes in the ship?
The two fat guys and they like talk like babies.
Yes, you know who they reminded me of? They always reminded me of the dudes from Nothing But Trouble. Have you ever seen the movie Nothing But Trouble?
Yes. Okay. Yes. I know exactly what you're talking
all
about.
All right.
So the technology that they coveted or that they stole is Herodin technology in that episode.
Aw, boo.
So and then they are never mentioned again.
What a throwaway.
Yeah.
All right. So but
back to Wesley looking in the magic glass.
Wesley looking into the opera glasses on the side of the computer.
What I found interesting about this is that like initially they were not even going to bring Wesley with down, right?
Right.
Wesley comes down there. You have Geordi. Yeah, you have Geordi who probably, I'm going to assume, knows more about what's going on, but instead they let the 12-year-old stick his face in the computer.
Yeah, and Geordi just talks him through it.
Yeah. Why?
I don't know.
Didn't we all see the tape of the ship that last met the Herodins last time?
Yeah,
I
can't explain it. I don't know.
It was the 80s.
Child empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
So, then we have the scene with Beverly with the cop. He offers her the gum. She sticks it in sideways and swallows it.
Yeah. Can we move on to my favorite part of that police station scene?
Is it during the interrogation?
No. It's not there. It's after. The interrogation's boring.
There's a great line during the interrogation, though, from the cop and Picard. The cop is like, oh, I worked it all out. You're going to be able to leave. You know, he comes back because he works out where Picard can leave, finally.
Right.
And he says something about, don't leave town. And Picard says, if I leave town, town leaves with me.
Right.
I love it.
I don't know why he said that, but.
Well, because of the holodeck.
No, I know why. I don't know why he would say it to the holodeck character.
I don't know, but it's hysterical. I love that line. If I leave town, town leaves with me. All right. So then Picard gets out of interrogation, tells them all, like, oh, yeah, we need to go back to our office.
No. You're skipping over some shit here.
Okay, go ahead.
Because Picard walks out of the interrogation room and sees Beverly.
Molesting the sconce.
Right. And he sees Beverly, and, like, they do a tight close-up on the both of them, and they get, like, fucking nose-to-nose.
Yeah.
And he's all like, wow, you look really good in that outfit.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, you fit it well and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, but we really got to get going, right? So her trip is over. She got to hang out in the police station. That was it. And she goes, well, can we maybe go see your office before we go? And all of a sudden, like, I heard,
right.
And Picard's like, I think that's a good idea. Yeah, I think we do have time for that, right? And, like, the two of them have these, like, smiles on their face, like, we're going to fucking go to Pound Town in the fucking office.
They're like the faces they had on at the end of the episode, the sexy time episode.
Yeah, the naked now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost exactly like that. And then all of a sudden, Waylon's like, oh, do you mind if I come along, sir? And Data's like, yeah, me too, buddy. Right? And then the look on Picard and Beverly's face.
Yeah.
Cock blocked by these two motherfuckers. I mean, it was ridiculous.
I have written down that Data cock blocked them. I don't have Waylon in there. Just have Data. But you're right. It is both. Fair.
But I was more shocked. I'm like, were they alluding that they were going to fuck in there? These two just fucked it up for them?
Absolutely. That is definitely what it sounds like.
Wow.
I agree with you. I wrote the exact same thing down. Data cock blocks Captain and Beverly.
Amazing.
Yeah. So they go back to his office. And while they're all going into the office, the nefarious dude from earlier shows up, knocks on the door. And he's like, you're going to let me in now. You've been avoiding me. And Picard's like, no. We'll talk to you later. And he pulls out the gun. He's like, no, I insist now. Mm-hmm. So they get these big fucking grins on their faces because this dude has them at gunpoint.
Yeah, and Picard's like, well, maybe we can stay for a few minutes. And then they all take their positions in the room.
Right, and they're all with their hands up and like, yeah, this is fun. So as the nefarious dude is talking, three of them decide to go back and hang out at Dixon Hill's desk for some reason.
Well, no, that's when Picard says we have a few minutes, that's when they take their places.
Okay.
And they all shift around.
Right, and Waylon stands up there, and he starts acting the tough guy, like, why don't you give me that gun? You're not going to do anything.
Come on, you dirty mug.
Right. And the nefarious dude known as Mr. Leech shoots him right in the gut.
Straight in the gut.
Yep, to which he falls to the ground. Oh, but when he's originally shot, everyone thinks it's a laugh fucking riot.
Yes, they do, till his hand comes up all bloody and shit.
Yeah, Beverly's clapping, everyone's got a big smile on their face, except for Waylon, because he's dying. Then they realize the gravity of the situation, and they're like, holy shit, how can this happen? You know, the safeties aren't working. And is that when Picard tries to call the exit? Oh, no, he goes up and talks to Leech first, and then he knocks the gun out of it, and smacks him in the face. And Mr. Leech takes great offense to that instead of trying to fight him.
After just shooting his friend, he's like, how dare you strike me?
Runs away, right. He's like, I'm going to tell Mr. Red Block. And he runs away. They start trying to call the holodeck exit. It's not showing up. And like, what the fuck's going on? And now I have to look at my notes.
And that's when Cyrus Red Block shows up.
No. He doesn't show up until after Beverly, who is looking at the wound, says, I need some light over here.
Oh, you want to go through the whole bit with the fucking lamp?
Because it's funny, Data picks up a giant floor lamp and tries to pull it over, and it unplugs from the wall, and goes out, and he doesn't understand why.
And he's staring at it.
Right.
And
it's just more stupid, well-written comedy bullshit in here.
No, it is. That Picard's behind him and picks up the plug. Now, how Data doesn't know this, but Picard does. I'm shocked at what they know and what they don't know.
I don't know. I mean, Data has read every single one of these books now because he went through the computer and read them all.
I know. I mean, for the sake of the comedy, it works perfectly.
Right.
Because Picard never says a word. He just picks it up and plugs it in the other side. And Data, meanwhile, never sees this and is just fucking with the bulb. And all of a sudden, it turns back on. He's like, oh, all right, got it. It works.
I made it work. Yay. So Red Block shows up with Mr. Leech and his other crony. And Red Block is none other than the boss from Reservoir Dogs.
Lawrence Turney.
Yeah. I couldn't remember his name, but I knew him on sight.
You ever see the fucking Fantastic Four? Yeah. He looks like the fucking Thing.
Oh, he does. He looks like, not the Thing, but he looks like, what the fuck's his name from the original Fantastic Four movies?
The Thing.
No, but the guy fucking.
Well, first of all, I'm quoting Reservoir Dogs.
Oh, really?
Yes. There's a whole scene where Tim Roth's explaining what he's like. He's like, dude, did you ever see fucking Fantastic Four? He's like, yeah. The Invisible Bitch, the Human Torch.
Oh, shit. I had no idea you were referencing.
He goes, yeah, dude. He goes, he looks like the Thing.
That's hysterical. I had no idea because Michael Chiklis played the guy who played the Thing in the original 90s.
And they kind of look alike.
And they do look alike a lot.
Yeah.
That's hysterical. I had no idea that quote was in Reservoir Dogs.
Yes, years before Michael Chiklis played the Thing.
Yes, years before. Good for you. I couldn't have pulled that quote out. That's hysterical.
Oh, it's like my favorite quote from fucking Reservoir Dogs. I just like it because the other guy goes, yeah, the Human Torch, the Invisible Bitch.
Oh, see, my favorite quotes are all from the dinner scene, or when they're all at the diner.
Having breakfast?
Yes. Anyway. Red Block shows up. He's like, which one hit you? And Mr. Leech is like, it was Hill. And Red Block gives him the nod that he can go hit him. And this shot, I really need to. Okay, so I know we have visuals and we do a still shot for our show to put over the episode. But I really think I just need to try to capture this video. Because Mr. Leech wrists gun slapping.
Yes.
Picard in the face is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
The sound is great too because
it's just
so limpy and it and it's like whoosh.
It sounds ridiculous. So he goes and smacks Picard in the face. Picard's bleeding now, and now my notes get really sparse because we go back to the B storyline again.
But there's not really much going on.
Yeah, aliens are being assholes again. They won't even talk to Riker now. They just put static through the
audio. The time limit is up. Picard has to give his message soon.
Yeah.
And that's when Cyrus Redblock and Felix Leech keep demanding that they get the item back. Where did you hide the item? Dixon Hill?
Yeah.
And obviously the crew has no idea what the fuck they're talking about because they will not elaborate anymore on what the item is.
It's right, it's clearly the story, whatever the item is from the story.
It's the Maltese Falcon or whatever. Yeah, and obviously they don't know where it is, and they're saying they don't have it, and he's going to kill everybody, and they need to get out of there because Waylon is bleeding like a stuck pig.
Mm-hmm.
And Picard tries to make a deal with him. He's like, I'll give you the item, but you got to let me get my man to safety.
Well, they also keep asking about Data. Because Data looks so weird.
Oh, well, that comedy runner is good, too, though, with the South America thing.
Well, that's – all right. So earlier we didn't mention it. The newspaper dude asks where he's from, and they say South America. And he's like, oh, clearly he has such a good tan, which is a joke, obviously. And then they bring it up again during this because Data starts saying, like, well, actually, I was created on a planet that – and Picard's like, Data, and Data just says South America.
Yeah.
which is really funny.
That was funny.
Yeah. But they keep mentioning the fact that Data looks weird. And so, like, Red Block kind of suspects something really weird.
Well, actually, what I found odd about this part was Data goes – they ask where Data's from, and Data starts telling them about what planet he was actually found on. Picard shuts him down. Data says he's from South America. Not 30 seconds later, I think Picard's like, listen, man, here's
we're
the truth.
We're all from someplace else.
Yeah, and they start going on that whole – down that route where
right,
they,
because
where
Picard
I said,
makes the decision that maybe this is the way that we reason with them. Like, we're not – this isn't a real thing. You're fake. We're real, but we're stuck in here. It's what you said earlier. Like, how
he's trying to reason with Rocket League.
Right, he's trying to reason with Rocket League. Which I'm going to definitely put in the notes because it's amazing. Okay, but they're, while they're trying to reason with Rocket League, we cut back outside to how Wesley is doing with trying to fix Rocket League. He's trying to fix the holodeck.
He's trying to reprogram it.
Right, and Riker's like, how's it going down there? And, well, we think we found something. I think we might be able to fix it. And Wesley starts going into technobabble, and Riker's like, for a fucking real human being, can you explain it to me?
Yeah.
And Wesley says, I can do this stuff, but it is possible that the program could abort and everyone inside could vanish.
Okay, now I wrote that down too.
What?
Yeah. What? Exactly.
What?
What? That needs some more explanation.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, no, I don't understand that. Was he saying, like, all the humans were going to vanish too?
That's what it sounded like. Who cares if the fucking computer program vanishes?
So, again, I understand it's the first real holodeck episode and they haven't nailed it down yet. Gene obviously didn't know, but I guess that could happen. I don't think it's ever come up before.
No, because they're not digitized. The
well,
people in the program, the people who are running a program around them are not digitized. It's not like they're being transported into the holodeck.
But that's the thing. The holodecks do run off of transporter technology.
So as soon as you walk in the door, your atoms are atomized.
No.
So, okay,
no. You're fine. You're fine the way you are. But who knows what machine it takes to generate all that shit around you? Maybe if something gets fucked up in there, it's going to take everything out of the room. All the matter. Not
no.
just the...
Lies.
Hey, man, I don't know. Because, listen, I'm going to fucking kill this cat. For a long time, it was you know, they were there like... They never really said what the matter was in there. They just said it worked off of transport technology, converting matter into energy, so they convert matter into this programmable energy they can do, but it's really nothing. Later on, roughly around Voyager time, when you have the holographic doctor and you're learning more about it, they say it's force fields and light.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But that was dumb.
Yeah, him saying that just blew my mind. But it was really just to add an extra layer of urgency and danger to the whole situation.
Yeah.
So they go back into we see back in the holodeck where Dixon Hill is trying to reason with Rocket League. And he's like, no, really. We're from a whole other place. There's a door and we go outside and it's a completely different place, blah, blah, blah. And then clearly Wesley is fucking with something because then instead of being in Dixon Hill's office, they're in the middle of the Arctic.
Yes.
And it's all snow and freezing cold and everything.
But and all the characters remain.
What?
All the characters remain. Like the setting changes,
yes,
but
all
the characters
people stay. But the setting changes, right. But then it goes back to his office and then the holodeck door finally opens. So Wesley clearly fixed whatever was wrong. The holodeck door opens. And Picard is like, that is it. That's our place out there. Let us get Waylon to safety, and I will get you the item and bring it back.
Or the wondrous items that he has on the other side of the
door. Right,
because
he's like, we belong to a different world that has full of riches and all this shit. So he said he was going to bring back the item and all these riches. To which Red Block's like, I'm not having any of that. I'm going to go out there and get that shit myself. Once I walk out the door, kill all these fuckers. So Red Block and... Mr. Leech walk out into the hall, and they're like, oh, this is the best. We're going to take everything. This is a new world for us to conquer as they slowly dissipate.
From the feet up.
From the feet up, right. Not just in general, from the feet up.
Now, you need to reiterate, they make it off the holodeck.
Right. They make it out into the hallway. Now, this isn't the only time, as you mentioned earlier, that shit has come off the holodeck, but this is also not the only time that shit makes it out into the hallway and dissipates.
Right.
Because isn't there an episode later with Moriarty?
Yeah, when he sticks his arm out, though, Moriarty, it completely just vanishes.
Oh, I thought he did the same thing where he made it out in the hallway and the same thing.
No, he makes it's yeah, but it's a trick. We'll talk about that episode.
Right. Well, there's a that's a it's a holodeck inside a holodeck thing. Yeah.
Right.
Got it.
This
I remember that one.
The holographic doctor on Voyager and I believe in future episodes of this, anything that moves past the door just vanishes. So that you would have half an arm.
Right.
You know, and
right.
then when you pull it back, you'd have it back.
Which
there,
makes a lot more sense than making it out into the hallway.
Right. And surviving a good 5 seconds, and as you're dissipating, be conscious of what's going on.
Right.
I mean, it's a little scary. I mean, to the point where Cyrus Redblock was like, I shall return!
I'm
like a
Cyrus
fucking
Redblock!
It was a little insane. And then in future episodes, this just straight up brings shit off the deck, and it doesn't dissipate. Don't know. But please, go on.
There was just a lot of existential stuff going on in this episode because it's
It gets really deep after this part.
Right. So Picard tells Data, hey, carry Whalen over to sick bay so we can get him dealt with. And Data leaves with Whalen and Beverly leaves. And Picard's getting ready to leave. And we never even mentioned the cop that showed up during all this. He wasn't very important. He was just adding some lines and shit. But a cop came to the door
who was friends with Dixon Hill. They're good friends.
He was good friends with them while the thugs were there, and they started beating on him and shit. But he didn't really add anything to the scene other than this part right here, which is when they're getting ready to leave, the cop asks Picard, well, he asks him, it's Dixon. He's like, when you leave, will I continue to exist? Or does this world continue to exist? Will my family continue to exist? And Picard's like, I honestly don't know.
Which is funny, completely ridiculous.
Which is funny considering his flippant response earlier about, like, if I leave town, town leaves with me.
Right.
But now we have Rocket League asking if it exists.
Jared, why haven't you played me?
Right. Which is really...
To which Picard should have just turned around and walked out and been like, fuck you, Toaster. Like,
exactly. Oh, don't even get me into Star, this is Battleship Galactica. Battlestar Galactica.
Like, I don't know why he's trying to even, like, comfort the computer program.
Right. I don't know.
Or just fucking lie to him and be like, yes. Yes, you will. Save program, end program, goodbye.
Yeah. Just pet the bunny. Just sit there and pet the bunny, Lenny. Nice
and bunny, and the funny part is that when Picard's like, I honestly don't know what happens to you when I leave, he walks out and everything goes black. And I'm like, oh, I guess that's what happens. You cease to exist.
But remember earlier, Picard, when he first left the holodeck, he did tell the holodeck to save program.
Mm-hmm.
So they existed. They don't. Well, okay, so no, because Picard left and said save program, so it should have ended right there. But then when he goes back into the program, that bitch has been killed. So the program kept running without him.
You're right. Or maybe that, like, when he went in there,
that was the next chapter.
The chapter moves to the next day or something.
Oh, man. It's so confusing. I don't understand.
Yeah, it's very confusing.
But Picard comes out and saves the day with the Herodin, too, because he delivers, he delivers the speech perfectly.
By the way, the sounds coming out of Patrick Stewart's mouth.
Yes.
I hope that there's a YouTube cut of that somewhere.
Well,
just
I have
over
heard it. I have to capture this audio and put it in the show somewhere.
It's like,
it is quite amazing. But that is my last note. The audio of Picard doing the greeting needs to be in the show, so I will capture
Actually, I had one last note. After that,
okay,
they flew all this way to give that 5 second message, and then he's like, okay, let's get the fuck out of here. That's all they did. They flew all there just to say that, and then they're like, let's leave, take us out of orbit.
Yeah, you know what? I didn't even think about that because I was too busy thinking about the other shit going on. But right, they came and delivered a 5 second message to the Haradin, and they're like, the Haradin's like, oh, you did excellent in greeting us in our own language. Thanks a lot. We love you guys now. And they're like, all right,
bye.
See you later.
Step on it.
Step on it.
Step on it, Mr. LaForge.
See, now in hindsight, do you like this episode any?
No, I really don't. It has some funny comedy shit in it. I will give you that. But all the other stuff with, like, I maybe because I've seen better holodeck crazy shit happen.
Oh, absolutely.
On other,
yeah. There are better
but
holodeck
yes.
episodes. But this
if I try to erase the
really get a good holodeck episode.
Right, if I try to erase my memory of all the other shows that I will eventually see in the future, you know, and just say, like, I've been watching the past 11 episodes of this show, yes, it was a good episode compared to what we've seen.
Okay, so let's review too. How many times a year do you watch The Next Generation?
I don't know. Once a year, maybe.
Okay, so you watch it once a year, and I can't tell you the last time I made it through the entire series. So,
oh, but I don't watch the entire series.
You flip through shit.
I pick choice episodes out. This is not one of them.
No, and I agree with you. This is not one of choice episodes, but making our way up to episode 11, this is one of the better episodes in the first 11 episodes.
I absolutely agree. Yeah. And I will say there
That's
is some clever...
That's how I'm judging it.
Yeah, and that's how I need to get judging it, too. And there is some clever shit in this episode. Some clever writing. I will give you that.
There was, and I was very surprised because this individual who wrote this, Tracy Torme, also wrote Haven, which wasn't
right
clever
Haven
on
was...
any scale.
No, he gave us Loxana Troy, unfortunately.
There was some witty banter from her, but like the humor in that episode... Which there was, like I said, when Troy runs out of the room and slams the gong down.
Right.
But it was not as good as the humor in this episode, I felt. And I'm very interested to see further episodes from Tracy.
Tracy Torme is listed as the author of the Dixon Hill stories as seen on the computer screen.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I know that they mentioned two specific Dixon Hill stories. There was the big goodbye... And then the long something. I don't remember what it was.
Budget restrictions prevented the Harada from appearing on screen. Torme was disappointed because he had developed a hive mind culture for the aliens. The script of the episode describes them as wasp-like, black and yellow, and pointed insectile features and waving black antenna. So maybe a precursor to the Borg?
Right. The hive mind.
Find out who's... Yeah. See if there's any other interesting things. But that's about it.
All right. Well,
it was a good episode. It wasn't the greatest, but I've seen worse.
Oh yeah, we have. Well, thank you all for listening. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Please make sure to check us out on the Soon to Be Named Network over on soontobenamednetwork.com or soontobenamednetwork.tumblr.com. We are there with a whole other bevy of other shows that are like-minded individuals doing different topics of different things. But you could also check us out on our own website, theprimedefective.com, or you can check us at Twitter on theprimedef. Send us a tweet about how you like the episode, or make sure that you comment on this episode, and also make sure that you tune in for next week and watch next week's episode of The Next Generation, Season 1, Episode 12, known as Data Lore, where we find out that Data might not be the only android in the universe.
Yes, that's true.
One of the better episodes from season one.
Yes.
And I'm looking forward to watching it and discussing it with you, Jared. Until then, Joel on True, Jared.
I am prepared for my death. Shit, cut that out.
I will cut that all out.
There's that line from Data, from Lore in the next episode where he's like, "Are you prepared for the death you've earned, little man?" He says it to Wesley.
Save that for next episode.
Okay. Joel on True, Brian.
And see you in the Jeffrey Tube.
Shut up, Wesley.
If I leave town, town leaves with me.